You're listening to Autism Thinks. It's hosted by the New Jersey Autism Center of Excellence, where we bring together the neuroscience, technology, and innovation to a soundscape that'll change your perspectives on all things autism and the world around us, just one episode at a time. Do you remember what it was like being a baby? Probably not so much. But each one of us were once like little scientists and curious explorers of our environments, trying things like using our limbs to move around or using language for the very first time. This episode, we're on a mission to explore the world of the infants, specifically how they move and what their movement can tell us about their nervous system. Beginning at the very start of the journey can give us a lot of insight into how the nervous system functions as a whole, beyond just the baby stage. To lead us into the infant's world, we have Professor Krista Einspieler to guide us. She's a neurophysiologist from the Medical University of Graz, and she's a true legend in the field of infant development. Einspieler was one of the pioneers of the General Movement Assessment, which focuses on spontaneous movements in infants. She worked with the famous Austrian physician and researcher Heinz Prechtl on this assessment.
My name is Krista Einspieler, and I have worked from 1985 onwards with Heinz Prechtl on the ontogeny of human behavior, that means the analysis of fetal movements and preterm and newborn infants.
Our guest references Heinz Prechtl, who's often called the father of developmental neurology. Prechtl was an Austrian researcher who studied zoology and medicine, and he was able to use his lens of observation in zoology while studying infants. He realized that the nervous system, including the brain, is biologically different from one age to another. This results in differences in behavior, which is also age-specific. Think about a tadpole turning into a frog, for instance. This metamorphosis shows a change in not just the tadpole's body, but also its neural functions, in response to its environment, from the water to the land. In a similar way, the fetus adapts from a sort of aquatic environment in the womb to eventually the outside air and on the ground as children. Their body needs to adapt to their setting, interacting with new effects of gravity, gaining conscious control over their muscles, and orienting their body around in space. Heinz Prechtl and Krista Einspieler have observed these changes from the fetus to the infant and child, and documented hundreds of babies, sharing their findings with the rest of the world.
Of course, a lot of memories, but we have to say that Heinz Prechtl was also essential in the development of the neurological examination of newborn infants. So he actually was the first who developed a standardized neurological examination for newborns.
To give you some more context, pregnancy is divided into three trimesters, which totals to 40 weeks for a full-term infant. A preterm infant would have a gestation period of 37 or less weeks. The developing embryo in the womb starts moving at around 7.5 weeks of gestation, and about 2 to 3 weeks later, a number of specific movement patterns appear. Ontogeny is an important word you'll hear from her. It's the developmental history of an organism in terms of their behaviors, specifically their movement patterns over different ages. It's the journey that a human takes from conception to their first steps and beyond.
And finally, it took us maybe almost 20 years to understand what are early markers for certain developmental disorders later on. So to connect what is the ontogeny of human behavior and how it could be used clinically was very exciting during all these years.
Christa Einspieler takes us back to the very beginning, the development of the fetus. She describes it in a dynamic way. While there are parts that are based in genetics and the nervous system at birth, the environment plays an important role in shaping how the fetus and eventually infant develops further.
By observing the fetus or also the young infant, we cannot understand what will be later on. And that is fortunately like this, because development is open and it can be influenced by so many things. And can you imagine if you know everything about a human being by just watching it at a young age? That would be not really nice. But by watching these movements, of course, we can be relaxed and grateful if we see not only the variability within one movement pattern, but also between different patterns.
From the very beginning stages of the journey of us humans, it's important to be on the move. The development of systems related to our senses, muscular, skeletal, and neural, all depend on activity and movement. For instance, think about the movement of hiccups. Hiccups are once pretty useful in helping us have the ability to breathe. The rhythmic movement of the diaphragm during hiccups trigger the development of smooth breathing movements and the lungs as a whole.
When we imagine that a embryo, we're still speaking about an embryo at 9 weeks post-menstrual age, it's not yet a fetus called. When the embryo has hiccup, that means the diaphragm is contracting forcefully. Then this muscle is better and better innervated so that 2 weeks later, this diaphragm can produce rhythmic movements up and down and up and down, so that we call then the fetal breathing movements. Then, so now 2 weeks later, we are at 11 weeks postmenstrual age. And another 3 weeks later, these rhythmic movements, these breathing movements can be regular or irregular. So this differentiation between the two different breathing movements is essential, we know this from animal experiments, for the development of the cells in the lung. So that later on, there are different cells responsible for gas exchange, and by later on, I mean the time of birth, and other cells responsible for the production of surfactants, that is a kind of chemical substance which is also essential for breathing. This depends on the movement, on the activity, on the differentiation of these two different breathing movements. And if we once more go back one step, then we can say it all depends that hiccup starts at 9 weeks. That is fascinating. Absolutely, yeah.
Professor Einspieler's research looks at movements that are involuntary and are a normal part of infants' development. They're different from newborn reflexes since they're not really triggered by touching the baby or an outside stimulus. You might think of movement as a sort of output or a response to a trigger in the environment. And that's the fascinating part about general movements. They're simply spontaneous. They're self-generated and they're not caused by the external surroundings.
Spontaneous movements is the main motor output in the young nervous system. So When we speak about the adult nervous system, then we think about reactions and reflexes and intentional behavior. But all this does not exist in the fetus and not in the preterm, because the preterm is like a fetus, just out of the uterus, and not in the newborn term infant.
What's really interesting about these movements is that they tend to follow a sequence of patterns in a neurotypically developing infant. Infants begin with a sort of movement called writhing, where the infant has whole body movements, including the arms and legs, that seem to swim in an elliptical motion. After about 2 to 3 months, the infant's movements start being localized to the hands and feet in circular patterns, sort of like elegant dancing patterns, called fidgety movements. Within another month or so, the infant gradually gains control over their body in goal-directed movements, like when reaching for the fun objects dangling from a mobile above its crib, or grasping and shaking a toy rattle.
There are neither a predominance of reflexes, nor are there intentional movements. But the motor behavior you see when you observe such a tiny baby is generated by the nervous system itself without the need of a sensory stimulation. It can be modulated sensorically, but it does not need to be stimulated. And the purpose of these movements, of what we call spontaneous movements, is that the development at that stage is absolutely activity dependent. That means that the brain develops, and also all the organs develop, are dependent on movements or on activity. And that is the fascinating thing.
Einspieler talks about the importance of variability in the infant's movements. This is the ability to move different body parts in a variety of possibilities in space. Exploration and play help infants improve their variability and give them feedback about how the world around them works.
So, first of all, to have normal general movements means to be variable. So the movements are the better, the more variable they are. And that means everything what we see and what is not variable, which means too monotonous, is not ideal for further development, because our nervous system needs variability in order to finally choose from all the different possibilities. And that means if we can see early that the nervous system lacks this variability, the most important thing is to provide variability from the caregivers.
She mentions what parents and caregivers can do to help support the baby in gaining variations in their movement.
That means to play with the young baby, to sing to the baby, to massage the baby, to let him or her move as much as possible, to have joy. All these kind of things are important for further development. I think it is very essential that clinicians take serious what parents tell them, because parents are the best observers of their infant. What parents can see is that if an infant is moving all the time in a similar way and does not have a lot of rotations. Rotations means that every body part, every limb, it's more easy to show than to speak about it. Every like joint, for example, the wrist is moving in rotation. And if this is lacking, I think parents can recognize that. And then it is not immediately needed to go immediately to a specialist, but it also can be facilitated to provide variability from the caregiver. So as I said before, to play and to massage and to move the baby if the baby doesn't move by him or herself enough. And this is all important. And then, of course, ask a specialist.
Our guest delves deeper into how these movements can be studied. And in present times, researchers often observe the growing infants through videos of them lying on their backs or supine on a flat surface. She highlights the fact that the collaboration between parents, as well as scientists and clinicians, is crucial in this research.
Of course, the collaboration of parents is essential. Without their consent, we cannot observe their baby. And it is easy to help the researcher or the clinician because the video is not invasive nor intrusive for the baby. It is just a short, a 1-2 minutes video of a baby lying in supine with a body dressed, for example. So not stimulating the baby too much because it should be about spontaneous movements. But then the researcher or the clinician, of course, needs to be trained to see the important things. So just parents collecting videos for the hope that somebody will evaluate that is not really helpful. So it needs to be the collaboration between a clinician or a researcher and the parents. But then the parents play a crucial role.
Apart from general movements, she tells us about other spontaneous movements. These movements all appear to derive from brain structures that form earlier on in babies, like the central pattern generator circuits in the spinal cord and the brainstem, or lower part of the brain.
There are not only general movements, there are a lot of other spontaneous movement patterns also which we can observe and which tells us a lot. For example, kicking or wiggling or swiping movements or all kind of movements to the midline and how the baby performs that, in which context. And this is all amazingly interesting, yes. So currently I'm working on a very large project in rural India, so around Benares or Varanasi, which is the holy city of India. I am working with community-based rehabilitation workers in order to early identify infants at risk.
One of Einspieler's current projects is taking place in the city of Varanasi in Uttar Pradesh in India. She's helping guide the communities and teaching them about infant development and spontaneous movements there, particularly for those that may not have as many resources as other wealthier communities. Her method of observation is incredibly useful in identifying developmental disabilities earlier on. And what's even more incredible, it's a method that's at no cost at all.
From this point of view, that it is just you need your eyes and you need your common sense and you need engage people who, for example, so our intervention project in these communities where we see babies who are not moving as we would like them to move is basically visiting these families every week and supporting them in simple techniques and simple strategies and, of course, also, as I said before, providing essential nutritions if needed. And the results are amazing. And this population, these villages around Varanasi, I think they like the project because we are running it now 3 years and still it's very much accepted.
Finally, in our conversation, we talked about Einspieler's future projects and plans.
Future project is a good idea if you ask a 70-year-old person. So at a certain time, I should think about retirement. But currently, I'm not because I am still fascinated by watching human behavior in general, but especially the behavior of the infants.
After nearly four decades of studying infant development and general movements, Einspieler says she's still learning to this day. She's honed in on the skill and art of careful, patient observation of the growing babies.
Part of this neurological examination was always to observe. And we young, at that time, so I'm going back to 1980-85, young research assistants there, when we went with him to a newborn baby or a young infant, he always asked us to put our hands on the back. So to not to be tempted to touch the baby, so just to keep our hands on the back and to observe. And after 10 minutes observation, which can be unbelievably long, he asked us, and now tell me, what did you see? And I remember my first 1-2 years being there for several months, a year, I was absolutely like paralyzed because I didn't see anything. And then I understand I need to know what to look for, and then I can see. And that was, I think he slowly guided me into this process. And that was a eye-opener, and it changed my whole life, I have to say, because I'm still watching and watching and watching.
Throughout the podcast, Einspieler has shown the importance of observation in this field. Though this may seem quite simple, these observational skills are powerful and can be developed over time and with experience. With the use of technology, as you'll see soon in our next episode of the podcast series, we can better understand the neurodevelopment and journey of babies and us humans overall. But for now, we leave you with Professor Krista Einspieler's words of wisdom. Thank you so much to Einspieler for sharing your thoughts, expansive knowledge, and research. And thank you for listening.
I think instead of becoming more and more complicated in research, we can also go a step back and become more and more simple in the sense of common sense, using common sense, and understanding that activity is important for development and we should not inhibit activity. And this activity should be variable. I can only repeat that again. And that means also we should keep an eye on the infants who demand the parents, come and play with me. Because this is the fine thing. But there are babies who are so restricted in their own behavior and do not belong to this group of infants who demand from the parents, come and play with me, but are just moving in a monotonous way. And then it is very much important to encourage parents maybe to use a little bit less the smartphones and tablets and play a little bit more with these children. That is my general wish. It's a very easy wish.